which was wonderful, but I still wasn't happy. So I went home over Easter break.
Yeah.
And I have an older sister that I could talk to. And we sat outside for about 3 or 4 hours behind my parents' house, just talked about things. And I said, this is what I'm thinking. And she said, you're smart enough. If that's what you want to do, you can do it.
Yeah.
And go ahead and try. My dad said later they were about ready to come up, drive up with a car, grab my stuff, and grab a hold of me and say, we're going home.
According to the Urban Dictionary, it seems that at age 4, success is not having to wear that diaper anymore. And as we get older, we measure life successes by having friends, getting a driver's license, having money, having a great family. And in the midst of all that, life affords us a learning curve. Thinking through the process of how we increase our learning to offer a greater experience. How often we step out of our comfort zone can move us forward to higher possibilities. We will succeed, or we will fall flat on our face. This is Life's Learning Curve, and I'm Paul Hart. Stand by. Here in Studio 502 in the Midwest, we share a few stories and ideas with a man named Jack, who's been thinking through and applying life's processes for years. Now, in segment one, called Down on the Farm, a supportive and bright family of educators nurture young Jack. In segment two, called The Move, Jack finds himself searching for new friends and a more competent school experience. In segment three, called Physics Plus Calculus Equals a Music Teacher, Jack shares his early college decisions. And in segment four, Music Educator and Beyond, Jack finds his way through educating students in band and orchestra while applying the structure of science and math to the human equation. Let's meet Jack Wise. Today here at Studio 502, we have music educator, woodwind musician, first chair, alto sax, soprano sax, voiceover talent. This is Jack Wise. Jack has that amazing diversity in his life that many of us envy, but like many of us know, a life's journey can have its hills and its valleys. Jack, thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome.
So Jack, what are you doing these days?
I'm retired from teaching, sort of. I call it semi-retired because I teach private lessons and I substitute a lot in District 300 where I taught for years.
Do you miss it?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, yeah. No. It depends on the day, and maybe I see something really be happening in the school and I go, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that on a daily basis. And the other times when you're working with the kids and you've got something going, it's there.
Where did music first begin for you?
Wow. Driving down a gravel country road with my mother singing in the car.
That's great. So you're just a small boy.
My oldest sister was a pretty good piano player.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, all my sisters took piano lessons along the way. So
sure.
I watched and listened and observed that. And we, sing the songs and, between Row, Row, Row Your Boat and I've Been Working on the Railroad and things like that, going down the road. That was entertainment at that time.
It was.
Yeah.
And looking out the windows.
Yeah. You're driving a 1952 Chevrolet, in that dark green and traveling from place to place. That's how you did it.
It's funny you bring that up. Some of the best memories I have in my life are just going out for drives on Sundays with my family. And I tried to translate that to my own family, and soccer got in the way. I was not able to replicate that, because it was something I liked so much. It usually ended up going somewhere for ice cream, which was always like that.
I see. I kind of grew up with homemade ice cream.
Did you?
Yeah. That. So
you mean the crank and all the dry ice?
Hand crank is the best. Not dry
it
ice. It's just regular ice.
Or regular salt. Ice. Yeah, yeah. I meant to say salt. Yeah, it's my mistake. Did your family have special recipes?
A couple different ones. Usually it was frozen custard, actually. But that was, my mom was a really fine cook. Something that I carry with me to this day. So it's, growing up with that and observing, you see how somebody puts things together and is happy that people like to eat it and that we can sit down together and enjoy it together.
My mom and dad had this one recipe for ice cream, the homemade ice cream, and it was peach ice cream. And whether you liked peach ice cream or not, it was really good. And so they'd cut up the fresh peaches, and we'd all take turns turning the handle and that type of thing. And, you know, I think that was their throwback. The way I wanted rides on Sunday with my family, they were presenting the hand-cranked ice cream thing.
Matter of fact, one of my uncles bought a 5-gallon crank freezer. And, yeah, you could crank it maybe when you first started out, he set it up on a platform next to a small tractor. Okay, which happened to have about the right diameter wheel, and worked out a device to tie the handle to the rear wheel. So with one wheel on the ground and the other wheel up in the air, that wheel would turn.
Oh, I love that.
You'd drop it into gear, turn it on, sit back and have a nice conversation.
Innovation seems to be in your family.
Half an hour later, the ice cream's done.
Nice. What kind of a student were you as you grew up?
Looking back, I would say I had a tremendous amount of curiosity.
Yeah.
That's still ongoing today. I read voraciously anything that comes along. Matter of fact, I can hook in. I remember an incident from when I first started school. I was like, I didn't go to kindergarten.
Okay.
So I started in first grade, and we had our family fall gathering with my dad's family, and one of my older cousins, I know he's about 10 years older than I was, you know, looked at me and said, "Well, I heard you started school. You don't like it, do you?" And I looked at him and went, "Oh, yeah." He was at that in-between stage. Later understood very much so. As a matter of fact, I mean, after he got out of high school, he went to work and whatnot, but he would ask me whenever he saw me what I was doing, you know, how was school, what I was up to, because he valued it was at that time he was in that kind of anti-phase.
Yeah.
My dad says I was ready before I got there.
Is there anyone who you related to or connected with really well when you were growing up?
My father started out observing me a lot, and then I obviously observed him along the way. And there were little, just like mini explanations of something along the way where he did something and said something to me, and I immediately understood that this was a key point that I needed to understand how this was happening. Being into science when I was a kid and stuff, I came home and there was a magazine coming out, Science Digest.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it showed up because my dad decided it was a subscription. It'd be nice for him, but he knew that would be further things.
I got it too.
National Geographic.
Yeah.
Started getting it that year.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that very clearly. Eruptions in Hawaii were reported, all that sort of thing. Big color pictures coming
in. The rainforests.
All this geology and everything coming into your mind and relating it to where, you know, I'm in Illinois. My father was observing the background going, "Well, this is where he is.
Uh-huh.
He needs this." I can't complain about my parents. My mother and I had rough times sometimes because I was stubborn and forgetful at the same time.
Yeah.
And she would get bent out of shape about that. She wanted me to click right in and remember stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to happen. I needed a different method.
Yeah.
And that wasn't in her wheelhouse.
In my situation, I felt great support from my mom on certain things. She really supported my interest in writing and drawing and art and that type of thing. I had no idea why I was doing what I was doing, but she supported it. Later, I figured out much later I liked to do visual things like this. But it hadn't been really that invented for me to do production work yet.
Yeah, sometimes you have to do these things.
These little
things along
pieces,
the way. And then,
and
then it comes together and you understand why and the theory behind it.
It made no sense to me. I didn't necessarily enjoy cartooning, but I did it all the time and I couldn't stop. And when I'd cartoon, I would think, I got to get back to writing because I wanted to write this story. And I did it nonstop all the time. And when I was writing the story, I thought, I can't wait to draw the picture that goes with this. And this was an ongoing thing that went on for years. It was parody of my own family, of exaggerations of things that had happened in our household. I learned that they laughed at themselves, and I could laugh at myself, too. I loved to make my father laugh. Loved it. That was a number one thing for me. If I could make him laugh, that was a very happy day for me. It's not that he didn't laugh frequently or laugh often, but I knew he was happy at that particular time, and I love that. You know, and I think he passed away just a few years ago, but that maintained all the way up to that point.
Was my sisters always supported me along the way? I think I was the beneficiary of things that they went through.
Yeah.
And they, you know,
that's true.
I observed that, you know, I wasn't the person who went around asking questions. I was standing back going,
observing.
Okay. Yeah. I see that. Yeah. What's going on with that now? You know,
making a hypothesis,
yes,
statement about what was happening.
Breaking you down and going, well, I'm not going to say that to Mom. She always looked to make sure that I was, you know, all of us kids were taken care of.
Yes.
And
how nice.
She was a really good cook who wanted, you know, made sure that we got the proper foods, even living on two poor teachers' salaries. Not always, because neither one of them always was, you know, able to do that. My dad tried to not teach for a while, and it, you know, didn't make enough money. Went back to teaching. Was very good at it.
Yes.
Just that he was trying to find another pathway, but that didn't work. But
sure,
he took care of us and giving us really not only nutritious but really nice, good food, and was valued in the community for that. Having a potluck or something.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, it sounds almost like a
Rachel,
church thing.
Rachel, would you bring a pie and your meatballs?
Your famous meatballs.
Or whatever, you know, those certain things.
Yeah.
And she could do lots of stuff. And, and we, you know, we had homemade caramels and
homemade
donuts. Yes, donuts.
Oh, that's a throwback. That's great.
Peanut brittle, and I already mentioned the ice cream.
Right.
You know, and those are just the you know, the
this is Mayberry,
fancy.
Jack. This is Mayberry we're talking about. It sounds wonderful.
You go back. You're living on a farm down in the countryside.
Oh, so you're on a farm?
Yeah, in central Illinois. That's what it was. In farm life, you learn to deal and work things out. And I sometimes feel that that's something people don't have to do a lot of anymore. The steps of making a meal can represent the steps of making something else, too.
Absolutely. It all transfers into other things in life.
Starting sixth grade, we moved towns rather suddenly. My parents were really dissatisfied with what was going on in the school.
Okay.
First through fifth grade, outstanding.
Okay.
My sisters and I were ahead of other towns around at that level.
Fantastic.
Those teachers were outstanding.
Yeah.
They dealt with 35 kids in a classroom and the gamut of a kid who had real difficulty learning to read.
Yes.
Up to, not to brag about myself or a couple of my sisters, but people who were so really far ahead of the curve, you know.
Doing independent work in,
All sorts of things. People who didn't let a book go by without looking through it and understanding what was going on in there. And then we moved, and it meant, for me, that was leaving friends behind.
Yes.
Some close friends.
Yes.
And really, that broke that association.
But it must have been hard for you to choose a career when you got down the road.
Well, yeah. I liked everything. I did everything really at a pretty high level along the way. Learning was a fun thing for me. I just, you know, curiosity and comparing things there. So along the way, I mean, being a good student, everything you're going through, and I hit high school, and I'm going like, I've been so good at math and science along the way that I thought that's what I was going to do.
Sure.
So I did all my applications and wanted to go to U of I or Champaign-Urbana, but they threw a loop at you about how you went into certain subjects. So they say, well, you scored well in this test, and you had calculus when you were in high school, so you're going into this class. And I turned around and went to my advisor at that time and said, I'm not good with that because my calculus class was nothing.
Yeah.
Our teacher just kind of put stuff on the board. We did the assignment, figuring out, reading the rules in the book.
And right.
That's how we did it. And we didn't have an understanding and applications and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Boy,
that's
true.
And I said, I'm not comfortable with that. Well, he said, I'm not changing it.
Yeah, I'm not changing it.
So I'm in.
Your education is not important to me, Jack Wise.
So there I was in an advanced level.
Yeah.
I was an honor student that first year. An advanced level calculus class, college calculus class.
Wow.
And I didn't have a very good
foundation.
Concept of what going foundation going into it. And studying didn't make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah.
I pulled a C. I wasn't happy.
No.
And then had to continue. I got into the science classes and stuff. I was doing fine. And actually started making the connection. The math got better in some ways because I understood practical things. Physics classes started connecting with the calculus and going,
oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Ah, these equations are all calculus related. This is a derivative of that, all that sort of thing. Which was wonderful, but I still wasn't happy. So I went home over Easter break.
Yeah.
And I have an older sister that I could talk to. And we sat outside for about 3 or 4 hours behind my parents' house and just talked about things. And I said, this is what I'm thinking. And she said, you're smart enough. If that's what you want to do, you can do it.
Yeah.
And go ahead and try. So I went back, and I hadn't really discussed it with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
My dad said later they were about ready to come up and drive up with a car, grab my stuff, and grab a hold of me and say, we're going home.
Yeah.
And I applied to the School of Music and said, set up an audition. I want to do this. So they sent me to the sax teacher and said, you know, he's in for an audition.
Right.
He said, I played for him. He said, and he was grew up in the South. I said, well, I think we can do something with you. And I said, well, great. You know, I'm in.
And you said, thank you very much,
yes,
sir. I appreciate
I played my old, a solo from high school or something, you know, that I had memorized at one time and played most of it from memory again. And he said, yeah, okay. So it basically was a lot of technique and not great sound or anything that you really should have. But I got in.
When we talk about just the title of this show called Life's Learning Curve, life throws us left and right curves all the time. And when it seems we're going straight down a road and we're happy as a clam, you see something off to the side and go, that's nice. I'd like to try that. But so few people I've come across have had the fortitude to step forward and say, I'm going to try that.
I've known several people that the mid-career shift.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody we worked with at Eastview
who
came from corporate America and became a very good teacher.
Exactly.
Those sorts of things happen. Sometimes the path reveals itself. And when I went to other music classes, learning other instruments in particular, but learning about music, history, and listening to stuff. It was where I belonged. Mm-hmm. I felt really comfortable. I walk into the instrument classes, the story I tell the people who ask me about it, we would sit down and they would start showing us stuff. And then, you know, you could try playing. Well, I would go and French horn or bassoon,
brass,
trombone, you know, those other things.
Because you were a woodwind guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And flute too. All these things that I hadn't really done before, but I would puzzle them out right away. There was the physical aspect of it.
Just
one of the things I discovered about myself was that there was a sense of the things around me. Okay. The part of playing baseball was the fact that I liked throwing, pitching, and feeling how I could control where the ball went. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Never was big enough and strong enough to throw 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
But
who was?
I could make the ball move and go where I wanted it to.
Yeah.
Well, it's physics, too.
It's physics, yeah. I mean,
this, when I got to doing this, all sorts of things lit up in my brain and said, not only is it learning these new things about these instruments, but it's the idea of putting them together, showing somebody else how to do it. So mm-hmm. the teaching part of it, you know, and I swore when I was in high school, I wasn't going to teach.
Yeah.
Because both my parents were teachers. It's like...
Yeah, same with me.
Don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But when I started doing it, started in music, they said, well, we need some people to help these kids, some honor students that came in from schools that never had music classes, and they wanted to try something.
Yeah.
They said, well, this will be good for these kids that explore a little bit.
Sure.
So I got to teach a few private lessons that way. And not only was I good at it, it was a gas. You know, when you get that kind of payoff from what you're showing somebody that... You help them to go where they want to go. It's huge. That's what teaching's about.
Yeah, it is. You know, it is. It's like the payback. You actually get paid back. You get paid back through the child.
You learn. I mean, my concept of a teacher is somebody who knows a lot about everything and then can apply it towards teaching one subject even, or maybe mm-hmm. multiple. If you're in elementary school, you're mm-hmm. teaching multiple subjects, maybe not to that high of a level, but you're teaching all of them and trying to lift every kid to their best level. We do a class on, all right, how do you start the student on clarinet? And I, you know, broke it down and went through all these steps, and the teacher's sitting there going, he said, I never played clarinet before, but I think I could walk over there and pick it up and play now. He said, I understand. I said, I knew about it because this was a musician teaching this class, but he said he wasn't a clarinet player. And he said, you could have started me really easily. And I said, thank you. You get that way. In order to become good at playing, you have to isolate yourself some just because you have to do the technical things needed to be to sound good. But again, it turns itself on its head, because in order to really be good, somehow it has to relate to your audience. Mm-hmm. Okay, even if that audience is only one person, or maybe if it's only yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, he was almost my size in sixth grade.
Yeah. Okay?
Put him on a tenor, and he goes, he's in the middle of a gym and 150 kids, and he's going, okay, and everybody can hear him all over the place, but he was playing it accurately. He actually had really good tone quality, even though it was loud.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his dynamics were a little off.
And I told Danny this later afterwards, and he kind of smiled and said, yeah, I kind of got that.
Yeah.
But he went on to be a good player. That's making the change into mm-hmm. music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you go beyond that. There's marriage. I met my wife in college, and we got really, really solid pretty quickly.
Good.
And that started teaching. And
those
sorts of things, the things you learn in the first couple of years of teaching, are amazing.
Yeah. These are not things, for all you listening out there, these are not things they teach you in college.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's kids going into education now do get some of this because they send them out sophomore year.
Right.
They're out in classes observing, but it's usually the university high schools and things like that where it's a little bit different clientele. But they get out there and then they extend that junior year and senior year finally with a really 16 weeks of teaching. I only had 8.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was... a good place, and I learned a lot, but there was still so much to learn.
Right.
Classroom logistics, management of the kids.
Budgets.
Budgets.
What you have and don't have.
I could write what they taught us about budgeting in school, in college, on one page.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That would be handwritten, not typed, folks. It was not enough. And we had a meeting, this was shortly after I started teaching in District 300.
Okay.
And they had people from U of I up, and they were saying, what happened? I said, a lot of respect, no disrespect to you guys.
Exactly.
I felt I got so much from you, but But it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I said, and I know people that I have met and working with who went to other schools that got even less than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, it's the preparation and logistics and some of those things. We don't automatically know those. It's a whole larger world you have to relate to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just yourself and a few people around you. It's you, and in my case, a classroom of 60 kids and a building with 40 teachers in it.
Yeah.
Or multiple, same when I started now, multiple buildings with
right.
each with 40 teachers
yes.
in them.
Traveling.
And traveling around and trying to maintain control of all this sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And when I started doing District 300,
yes.
I was hitting 5 schools in a week.
5 schools in a week.
And
yeah.
Luckily, one of the things that was already established was they had some record cards for the kids. I'm going, cool, because I could record stuff on those. One side was just
yeah.
student information. The other side was recording. I fixed up a thing to put on the backside to record what the kids were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so right when I start lessons, I'm the person who put down stuff for the kids. So I'm pulling it out.
Yeah,
and I'm
right.
checking lesson
oh,
groups.
Oh, that's great.
Names to faces.
Yes.
So in 3 weeks, oh, hey, that's the Braun kid. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's talking about playing bassoon this year.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to connect it.
My first year of teaching, this is in a regular classroom, and this would be fifth grade, and all I heard was, well, this is a really hard class. This is a very challenging class. We just want you to know. And the day before school started, the principal and the psychologist called me into the office and said, Paul, what are you going to do? And I said,
About what?
And I said, well, now I know today exactly what I'd answer. And not to just give an answer, but it's the truth, because I was asked the same question the last year I taught. How did you deal with that? How did you deal with that mix?
Mm-hmm. So you've got to challenge them. So part of that yeah. is you know, remember we went through differentiation?
Yes.
And by the way, we're on an educational bent here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we are.
But that's life's yeah. learning curve is part of it, too.
Absolutely.
teaching music to beginners, you differentiate all the time because
yeah.
this kid may only be getting the basic tune, but he's doing okay at it if you get in that time. This kid's got it licked the next day, so you know coming up, all right, you need to have extra tunes for that kid play that uses that stuff that he's already learned
mm-hmm.
and maybe extends them beyond without embarrassing the other kid, trying to make it kind of like as, hey, you know what? If you get this thing learned, you do a little extra practice,
yeah.
you'll get that too.
Good.
And that was always my goal was to mm-hmm. go, hey, do this, and this is what's coming next. Can you get there?
Oh, that's good.
I mean, I was always
down
asking,
the road.
God bless him, Tom Robertson that
yeah.
I work with. Okay.
Yeah.
We had similar ideas about this.
Yeah.
I was coming up with tunes to give, always supplement the kids say, oh, I like the songs of Sound and Music. Okay, here's Do a Deer. Song from Mary Poppins. And then Star Wars comes out, and it's like, kaboom. Any kid. any kid. I don't care.
Yeah.
Boys, girls, they didn't know what they were. They wanted Star Wars.
It was a field day for John Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, still is.
Yeah.
The guy is great. Tom would say, well, I've got this thing. He even came up with a system. And I said, well, I've been doing some similar stuff. What are you doing? And he did it for a grad class that we were in together. And I got this thing and said, this is gorgeous. Because he had it lined out that when kids got finished with certain tunes, things were there for them to do extra. And I took it a step further. I said, you know what? When they finish Mary Had a Little Lamb,
mm-hmm.
give them this thing that's called Let's Go Band or Sports Cheer, whatever. Bum,
yeah.
bum, bum, bottom.
Bum.
Okay?
Yeah, right.
Sit. They're only one note away from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, okay. And so lined it up to match with their lesson book. So there was an extra thing for them to do all the time.
Right.
And
enrichment.
Yeah. Well, all the kids ate it up. If the kid was going slow, he's like,
that's when you got him. That's when you got him, Jack, right?
He says, I got to get this. Mr. Weiss, What am I missing? What's not?
Yeah.
I said, okay.
Here's a fingering.
Watch your fingers.
Yeah.
Okay. Feel that hole so that you come. I'm speaking clarinet right now just because it's coming
right
to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I said, feel that hole and make sure that it seals. Yeah, okay. So try it a couple times now. Feel the difference and even slide around a little bit. Okay, sure. Now, make sure when you go home and practice this, you try it a couple times and then try and put it in song. Okay. And by the way, how many times are you doing this? Well, I usually play it once or twice. And,
no.
You know, I had a...
Yeah.
When I did my master's...
Yeah.
I went into the PE and the kinesiology thing and started looking at this research, and it's saying, okay, you need 35 to 40 repetitions to start locking a skill in. That corresponds to if you take using certain notes or something like that 5 times a day, 7 days a week. There's your 35.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some
kids are going to do it more.
Yeah.
Some maybe less, depending on you play it. Stop and think about what you did. Go back and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
The first time you do it, the second time you do it, you're just now starting to be familiar with where things are going. Okay. The fourth and fifth times is when you really start making a difference.
Mm-hmm. You can see it.
You do that one day. The next day, you're on 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You're remembering what you did before. Now, if you skip a day, you're going to forget some of it. So make sure you do it 5 times a day.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out the whole kinesiology thing all fit with that.
That's great.
And I'd come up with this before that. It's just kind of like thinking through the process. And I'm going, wow, this confirms. I wish I'd known this sooner. Because I was getting my master's. I'd already been teaching for 15 years or something like that.
Well, a lot of the great stuff, it happens down the road, a piece.
You know, I had a little cello player. I was teaching strings, too. And he did Fiddler on the Roof. Bum ba ba bum bum ba 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 bum bum ba 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 bum bum ba 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 ba, you know, and ba 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 bum 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 to get the, and get, you know, he had the ear and everything, but he was curious. I said, sure, why not? Okay, so I played it for him, wrote out part of it, and he figured out the rest. You see the eyes light up for something and go, okay, I can reach him that way. I had taught 2 years prior to that. First year was in Decatur, doing exactly what I was doing, beginning band and orchestra things. And I came to, then I taught in Orland Park for a year, and I ended up doing just general music.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be a replacement for the band director, only they didn't work out a way to fire him.
Surprise!
So I ended up teaching general music and some band lessons.
Yikes!
But when I came to District 300, I walked into this thing, and they'd had a guy that they valued quite a bit doing it, but he was going on to other things. So I came in and is doing this, and I knew I had it. I had all the skills to do it.
Yeah.
But I got out in the schools and started recruiting, and then the teachers in the schools were the first one to say, I like how you're doing that. You're getting kids interested. You're showing them possibilities. And I started teaching kids, and I had an outstanding group of kids. They were ready to explode. So sky's the limit.
Yeah.
You want to do that? I'm ready to go. And one of those schools, Dundee Highlands, because the people there were beautiful people who cared about what was going on. And we did dumb things like the teachers had parts in the musical that the fifth graders did. You know, we did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Jan
the
Miller.
Teachers sang, the teachers sang the book report thing, okay. She tried to do it later at Perry, and the teachers backed out of it and wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But at Highlands, they didn't care. We got up there and did it anyway. You know, it was just for the fun of it. And I played the mallet parts. There were outstanding students along the way that and some of the parents were outstanding too that I got to know, and they said, you know, they supported what I was doing and came to apologize to me if their kid didn't want to do it because some other teacher on another level was just driving them nuts and they really couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And then that happened a couple of times, and I said, I'm sorry that it's taking you away from music. They said, no, it's not.
Yeah.
If it takes away from music, we're not going to be in that class. But they will be doing music in some other way.
I said,
okay. I said, you can't just throw it away.
Right.
Because it's in you.
Right.
huge teamwork thing.
Component. It's the same as sports is. It's just a different thing.
Except the team in music is usually bigger.
Yeah.
you got more people to cooperate.
A lot more jobs.
A lot more jobs, a lot more things that can go wrong unless everybody's taking care of their business.
Yeah.
The middle schools went from having separate band periods for 7th and 8th grade to 30 minutes opposite lunch.
Okay.
And so that lost 12 to 13 minutes or whatever we had difference meant that there were higher level thinking things that we couldn't go into as much. I tried to schedule around and we kept most of them going. As a matter of fact, the first group, I flat out told them at the first rehearsal, you know how short a rehearsal is. Okay, we still want to do the same things we were doing last year in 7th grade, continuing those on.
Right.
Except we got to waste less time.
Right.
And that was one of the great groups that just said, okay,
yep.
What do we have to do?
Let's go.
Let's go. Ready.
I love groups like that, man.
And those are the ones where you do the silly jokes or the intelligent jokes.
Yeah.
And it's not just one or two faces you see. You see half the band going, you know, hiding their faces or groaning because they got it right away.
They got it. Yeah, it was way too early.
And then you go, and plus then they could do that, and 10 seconds later you're going, okay, number 25, please. Bam. You're back on track. And I got chances sometimes to sub in somebody else's class when I had it. I didn't have free periods very often, but if I did...
No, you didn't.
I would you know, help somebody out, and I would go down to in the 6th grade math class or something like that, and the kid's going, what do you know about math?
Yeah.
You're band director.
You're one thing. You're pigeonholed.
Well, I'm going like, I'm going like, okay, what are you working on here? And then I'd solve the problem in my head and spit out the answer while they were still figuring out. They're going... Oh, he does know what he's talking about. But then we could have fun with it, too, because they would that's an element of trust.
You became multi-dimensional. How about
all of a sudden, rather than being a sheet of music.
Wow. Imagine that. Hey, tell me about this voiceover thing.
Well, I really haven't done that much with it. It's been part of my teaching for a long time that I would use cartoon character voices.
Right.
Kermit the Frog. And we must do this, not... Yoda in particular is a favorite.
Favorite reversing
thing
the sentence.
Suffer and succotash. You don't want to play it that way. The old Looney Tunes and things like that. And I had kind of put out some feelers to do some things and never got a lot of response. What I really need to do is to write a whole, like a routine.
Yeah.
That I would do voices and characters talking to each other, something like that. Record it and send it out better.
A great voice. I have to really work hard to enunciate properly, but you have a great speaking voice.
Any teacher who wants to be really good should go to acting school.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, they
don't you consider kind of a performance though what
it,
you do?
It is. Anyway, I played a solo with the Fox Valley Concert Band. I suggested just because they were saying, well, does anybody out in the band think they would want to play us? They were trying to get into a thing where we featured soloists with the band.
Yeah, right.
And I kind of raised my hand and said, and I came up with this thing. It's an outtake from the soundtrack of Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it's a jazz-based soundtrack and everything, but there's an arrangement out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And one of my reasons was I've been teaching all these things. And, I mean, along the way, my playing skills didn't develop like I would have liked to.
Because you're teaching them.
Well, that's part of it. But prior to that, just because of where I was, I didn't get the exposure in high school to certain things that would lift me above that. And when I got into college and started doing music, I was catching up. And I was doing that, but when I graduated college, I said, I got this far, and that's about where it is. But I started practicing those first few years as I was teaching and realizing I'm still getting better. Oh, so then I got chances to play jazz, and I played some jazz in college.
Yeah.
To play, but it's sitting in with people and
yeah.
really good people next to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, it's going in the ears. I'm going, oh yeah, okay, I understand uh-huh. where that's going.
Yeah.
And so.
How fun.
Yeah, but I started applying that in teaching, and I'm teaching these kids about it, you know, because I'm putting stuff together and going, well, in order to do that, they got to know this. That's putting it into me, too.
Yeah.
And so
oh, that's
I got chances to apply yeah. it, and, you know, the occasional solo with a jazz group or something. And
uh-huh.
one time it was a professional who was the front star for the ECC Jazz Fest. You know, and he comes back and he says, yeah, nice solo, man.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, okay. So along the way.
Start thinking.
Yeah. Well,
start
you
thinking
go,
right
okay,
away.
Okay, we're trying these things.
What am
things,
I doing? So, yeah.
Okay. And so you go through these things. You study about how to teach kids to practice, show them how to practice, and, you know, all the sequencing I was talking about before.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I need to apply that.
Yeah.
But I haven't stopped learning and doing stuff.
And you
stuff.
Won't. I know just from your explanation. You were learning as a kid. I do know people at the age we're at, or even younger, that they're done. I know everything I need to know. And I do feel bad because, don't you, I leap out of bed every day. I mean, I maybe not, but I do get out of bed, and I can't wait to see what's
slowly
happening.
Slowly and stretching.
Yeah. Well, there's more stretching, yeah. Hey, Jack, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it.
It's fun. It's good to talk with people. You know, we have past history of teaching and whatnot. And that's just, it's great.
Now, what I like about Jack is his approach to the day-to-day. He is an observer, and he's a listener, and he truly does listen. He's not intimidated by others' contradictions or arrogant from praise, but what you will get from Jack is an honest and unique perspective and a love for lifelong learning. It never leaves us. It's never left Jack. For Life's Learning Curve, I'm Paul Hart.
Our show is put together by producer Paul Hart, with assistance by Brian Kelso, Fred Larson, and ST Dog. Mixed by Chad Loebner, with technical directors Heidi Cerner. Musical assistance by Riley Hart. On this show, special thanks to Jack Wise and Trace McClintock. Our website, lifeslearningcurve.buzzsprout.com. If you like us, hit that subscribe button. I'm Paul Hart, and we'll be back soon with more stories from Life's Learning Curve.
We're clear.